I'm Brian Carpenter, host of Fresh Air at 5, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of My EdTech Life. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful Thursday. Yes, it's not Monday or Tuesday when we usually do our shows, but you know what? When the stars line up, we make it happen. And today I'm just excited because I get to chat with Renee Dawson one more time. So again, I'm really excited. But before we get, you know, straight into the conversation, I want to thank each and every single one of you that supports our show. Thank you so much for all the likes, the shares, the follows. Thank you so much to all our new YouTube subscribers. Thank you so much for getting us one step closer to getting to our mission of 1,000 subscribers. And also for all of you that interact with our videos on social media at My EdTech Life, whether it's on TikTok, Instagram, LinkedIn, and so forth. Thank you so much. As you know, we do what we do for you so we can bring you some amazing content and amazing guests such as we have tonight. And tonight, again, it makes Renee a two-time guest, but it's really kind of a re-record just because there was some tech issues that happened. And as we know, we always say tech happens, but I'm glad to have Renee back to share her incredible story and just to get to relive that and even go in a little bit deeper on some things that we definitely left out and that we want to talk about. So let's go ahead and get started. So Renee, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you for having me back so soon.
Thank you also for making the time to come back so we can continue our conversation and be able to be here together as well. And just again, to relive that conversation. And so let's go ahead and get started. So for all of our audience members, again, that maybe didn't even catch you live on the first time around, but now get to see you live and hopefully with really clear audio on my end, we can go ahead and make this happen. If you can give us a little brief introduction and what your context in education is, and then we'll dive in.
Sure. I am a career-long educator. This is year 18. I spent 15 years in special education. I've done co-teaching, resource, hospital homebound, consultation, and even itinerant where I traveled from school to school. Every disability category, pretty much. And now I'm in my third year being an educational technology specialist. And I currently work on the Verizon Innovative Learning Initiative at my school in Atlanta, Georgia.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, I'm excited because I know, like last time, we talked about some of the great things that you're doing. But before we do that, again, we definitely want to get started with that origin story one more time. And it was just so cute what we've had to talk about in, you know, briefly, you know, backstage and just to kind of relive that moment. So again, we know that every superhero has an origin story, Renee. So again, every guest that comes on to the My EdTech Live show, I definitely liken them to superheroes because they're people that I admire because of the work that they do. So can you tell us a little bit about your superhero origin story, Renee? Was education something that you knew you wanted to be in from the get-go, or was it something that came in later in life?
Honestly, I knew from the time I was in elementary school that I wanted to be a teacher. Every career day when we would dress up, I would dress up as either a teacher or the counselor at school because I knew I wanted to be in this life and dedicate my life to helping others in this way. I used to go home from school and line my dolls and teddy bears up on my bed and teach them my homework. My dad made me this incredible desk that would fold up into a really big whiteboard. So I had plenty of space to write all my homework problems out for my dolls and teddy bears. And even sometimes my little sister, if I could get her to sit still long enough. Starting in about third grade, I would go back to my first and second grade teachers and help them grade papers after school because my mom substitutes on at our elementary school. And from there, I went back and forth as I got closer to college about whether I really wanted to be a teacher. And I just decided to go for it. And in the elementary education program, I wasn't really finding my stride with that. I was a little hesitant to say that's what I wanted to do. And then during my introduction to special education class, the professor pulled me aside and said, "I think this is your track. You have the heart for this. You have the mind for this. and you like a challenge, so you should be a special education teacher. And I took her up on that, changed my major literally the next day to special education. And I never looked back at the 15 years that I was with those amazing kids.
That's wonderful. So tell me a little bit about that too. I want to relive the moment because I know that I was in awe of what you were able to accomplish, you know, coming into the classroom and working in special education and working with some students that needed some additional supports. So again, just kind of take us back that first day walking into this classroom, you know, what was going through your mind and how did you just kind of find your, I guess, just find yourself within that classroom?
Yeah, my first year teaching, I actually worked on a grant. I've done a lot of grant work. That was helping students from juvenile justice get re-initiated back into school and society. And so I was a 21-year-old teacher walking into a classroom of 10 or 11 kids that had recently been released from the juvenile justice system. And I just saw these kids that needed somebody to be their champion. They needed somebody that believed in them for once in their life, that really respected them and cared. And once I realized that that's what they needed, everything else fell into place. We had an amazing token economy where I found like a time clock at Goodwill and they would clock in and out. They got a paycheck every 2 weeks. They had to pay rent, lights, internet, water. They could put their money in the bank or buy, this was free talkies, so hot fries or candy or McDonald's gift cards or t-shirts or whatever they wanted from our school store that was all donated by generous donors of the community. So they really learned a lot of life skills and I was able to really bond with a lot of these students. I'm godmother to, I think, 3 or 4 of their children now, been to a lot of their weddings, and only one has gone back in the system at all. So I'm very proud to say that, like, I feel like I definitely made a difference with these kids because they just needed somebody to believe in them for the first time in their life. And I was young and, you know, had that sparkle all over me where I was like eager to do anything I could as a teacher and just do what I knew I should. And what I knew I had to do was care about these kids and give them a reason to come to school every day.
Absolutely. And that is so great to hear, you know, and again, very similar, you know, your experience that, like you said, that shine, that sparkle that you brought in, you know, into the classroom with your students. I mean, kind of reminds me a little bit about how I came into the classroom too, as well. And coming in from marketing and sales, it was really just getting to know my students. So it was just something natural because marketing and sales, it's all about customer service. It's knowing, you know, your customers' likes and dislikes, and coming in as a fresh new algebra teacher, it's usually, and I don't know if this is the experience that you've had, but I know at least here the experience usually is it's like the new teacher kind of gets the tougher group, or you know, the students that are like the repeaters and so on. So that's the class that I was in. So we had block schedule, and so I had students that were coming in every semester there was a new group that came in, but it was all about the same thing, you know, really getting to know the students. And I'll be honest with you, many of them that were repeaters, they really just needed a champion, like you mentioned. And I love that word, just really advocating for them and really just, you know, playing to their strengths. And all of a sudden, you know, students that were repeating the class, they're like, hey, Mr. M, this is my second time taking it. And I finally understand, you know, the way that you're teaching this stuff and building those relationships and that rapport. It really makes a huge difference. And even to this day, you know, being able to be a champion and be an advocate for students, no matter what the situation is, because we always know that it doesn't matter what classroom you're in, whether you're in a classroom where students may need additional supports, or even if you may be in a gifted classroom, we don't know what students are maybe going through. And it's always very important that we are champions for them and advocate for them. So that is so great to hear. But I also love the way that you ran your classroom. Talk about getting real world experience at such a young age and seeing the fruit of that. Like you mentioned, being a godmother to many of their kids and then being to the weddings and just making that impact. I mean, that is wonderful and amazing. So now I want to talk a little bit about your creativity here too, as well. Not only, you know, kind of building up from, you know, your first year here and up to what you're doing now, but we know that tech has been, you know, at the forefront for you and has been something that you've used to enhance the learning experience. So tell us a little bit about the tech that you did have available and how you leveraged the tech to really engage your students.
So back then we actually had one of the first smart boards ever in that classroom. which can be picked up and thrown. I know that for a fact now, unfortunately. But we had the three, you had like the red, the blue, and the green marker, and that was all you could do with it. And we had laptops, not great laptops. They were like free Chromebook laptops, the bad ones that you would get. And then the funny thing, I always tell the story when I get new equipment in. We couldn't find the charging cart for months at the school, months. And then all of a sudden, one day, I was walking through the cafeteria and I was like, that's a charging cart. The cafeteria staff had thought it was a bread warmer. And they'd been putting bread in our charging cart, thinking that they're wondering why it wasn't warming up, plugged in, because it wasn't for bread. It was for computers. So but we finally found our charging cart. We're in business. But that was one of my funnier tech stories. And then after moving on from that, I really found my groove with kids with physical disabilities, because I found that my tech savviness met their challenges head on. Any challenge they face, I could find a tech solution to help them, to help level the playing field for them and give them a shot at being equal to their peers on an academic level. Whether it was hacking an Xbox controller to turn it into a mouse and using an on-screen keyboard so a kid with muscular dystrophy could type, without having to move his hands too much as he was losing muscle control, or using an on-screen mouse app and an on-screen keyboard for another student losing muscle control to be able to type and graduate with honors on time as the only English-speaking person in her family. So just, you know, amazing things that these kids could do with the technology, just a little bit of tech in their hands. They could do amazing things. And you'll be able to watch a kid connect with technology and find their voice is a different kind of, we're getting goosebumps. It's like a different kind of like ta-da moment, you know, because you're like, now they have a voice. And yes, that voice might not always be appropriate. They might find the page with the sound effects and use inappropriate ones at times. But what kid with a regular voice doesn't do that in class from time to time? So you have to just treat them like any other kid and like, that's not an appropriate sound, right? You can really make that sound, you know, here or there. So just be able to have that tech and let them be somewhat normal for a little bit in life, when so many times they are treated like they're not as valued as much as other kids, especially in the classroom and in education.
You know, you've hit on so many great things there, Renee. Like, number one, it's oftentimes, and this just happens in just a regular classroom too, that many times we don't think that our students can handle technology, you know, or be able to understand. And sometimes it's just that fear of like, oh, what, you know, we don't give them the benefit of the doubt that they'll be able to understand and pick up what they're doing. And even much so now, like you mentioned, you know, with the students that you're working or that you had the opportunity to work with that needed those additional supports and so on. Many times, I think even as educators, we're very reluctant to even try that just because we see more of the disability rather than, hey, the capability. And the capability is there. It's just a little different. It's going to look a little different. Like you mentioned, you know, sometimes even, you know, rigging up an iPad in a different way, rigging up a controller in a different way to meet those goals. And I think that's something that I know I have seen and even experienced myself. But then, like you mentioned, the importance of treating them as if they were just like any other student. And many times that goes a long way. It's just going to look a little different. But tell us a little bit more. I know you mentioned right now one student that you were able to get them to graduate on time and graduate on honor. But I know that there was a separate story too as well that you kind of mentioned, and that last time that you brought it up, like, really sent chills, because I was like, this is amazing. And the things that one can do with technology as far as providing that, equal opportunity for learning. And so can you tell us a little bit more little success stories that you can recall?
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think which one it was, but there's just been so many amazing kids that I've had the opportunity to just be a part of their life and be a part of their story. And hopefully somebody that they just remember in the future that cheered them on and helped them be successful. I had a student who, was nonverbal, so she couldn't speak at all. And we taught her, there's actually a research-based reading approach called the nonverbal reading approach. We taught her how to read with that. And if you've ever seen a kid learn how to read, you know that their eyes light up when they finally click. So you can see that too with students who are nonverbal. Their eyes click, they finally light up and they're like, oh, I got it. So just doing that. And I remember having her pass one of our statewide assessments and reading and thinking, oh my gosh, she did it. Like, she actually is reading. Like, I doubted her at times. She was actually reading the whole time and she could do it. And just because she didn't have the capability to speak didn't mean she couldn't read. She just needed, like I said, a different way to read and respond to the tests. I've had students that have needed to use mouth sticks. So like literally a stick that they're holding their mouth to type on an iPad or a tablet or even a laptop and do some incredible things. I taught a kid who didn't have arms and a cut with her feet. So I mean, there's all sorts of really amazing things out there that they can do, that anybody can do, with somebody who is just willing to try another way. I've gone to Home Depot. Every time I go to Home Depot, I'm like, or Lowe's, I'm like, oh, I could make this into this tool, or I could use this for this. And I know one time one of my colleagues and I made a sandwich holder for another girl who had cerebral palsy and was unable to use her arm. So it was like a flexion tube around her neck, and she could lean down and bite her sandwich out of like a holder. And that made her independent at lunch. And that's all she wanted, was to sit with her friends at lunch and not have an adult with her. So just that kind of freedom, you don't realize that it's that important to these kids until you are able to give it to them and see how much they shine when they have that freedom and they're independent for the first time in something that they've never been able to do before.
Absolutely. And that is so important. And so I want to ask you, I know before we kind of move on to also, because your road does not stop there. I mean, you are like in different roles and of course all the tech that is involved in a lot of your roles, but just adding a little bit to this conversation, you know, it's so important now, especially, you know, with as much technology as we have. I want to ask you, what do you feel in your experience that you've seen has been a barrier for educators to kind of really take that risk and use technology and maybe in a different way that they may not have thought of? But again, going back to giving equal opportunity for learning to our students, what are some of the things that you have seen?
First, and usually the most big one, is their own personal hesitation or fear of the technology. We're kind of at an interesting, like, overpass in education where we have that generation that you actually could really break technology if you hit the wrong button, and that generation where the undo button fixes everything, or just restarting it fixes everything. So we have these teachers that still are afraid to hit any button that they're not supposed to hit because it could break it, where you're trying to like comfort them and help them along the way, say, no, you're not going to break it. It's okay. You can just restart it. You can turn it off and turn it back on, or hit undo, or whatever the trick is. But they're just that their own hesitation a lot of times gets in the way. And then the other thing that gets in the way is just feeling like they have to go, 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 go. There's so much on their plates. And this is just one more thing we're adding to their plate. Like, great, this is a great tool, or this is a great software platform, but it's just one more thing I have to do in the classroom when I just want to teach. So there's all sorts of ways to really help them see that integrating technology is important and can be done seamlessly. And one of the things I always kind of talk about when I talk about professional development for my teachers is that I have like three levels that I always think of my teachers on. I always think of them as either speedboats, tugboats, or anchors. And your speedboat can't pull an anchor up off the ground. The line's going to snap if you know anything about driving boats. So your speedboats, you got to give them like an assignment to do on their own. Those are usually like my first or second year teachers, or some of the older teachers that are really into tech. They've already figured out the software before I've started my Technology Tuesday professional development. So I give them an assignment and they can either stay in their room or come into the media center and do it on their own. They have like a work artifact they have to show me that they actually did something that I can check them off and give them credit for. And then I have my tugboats, my anchors work together, because your tugboat is what's going to really pull your anchor up off the bottom. And your tugboats are the ones that with a little bit of love, they get it, they get going, and then they can just go, go, go with the tech. And then my anchors are the ones that are like the tech hesitant teachers, the ones that are like, oh, I forgot my password, even though I just made it. The ones that are really scared to break anything, that they're going to break everything. So I found that my tugboats can really comfort them a lot more than I can, because I'm definitely a speedboat. So my tugboats definitely can comfort them and relate to them more than I can. So if I have them paired up working together, they kind of pull each other along.
I love that. I love that analogy, but I love the way that even, you know, when you are giving your professional development, you know, just very much well, like in your classroom, you know, the type of students that you have here. Also, as educators, we're also learners. There's also a lot that goes into play, but I love the way that you're able to identify your teachers and really help them out. And oftentimes, like you said, you know, you've got those that go and they're on their own And then, like you mentioned, I love the ones that were, they just kind of need a little bit of hand holding, but then after that, they get comfortable with it, you know, they adopt, and then they're able to help, you know, the teachers that are just a little bit more hesitant, a little bit more scared. But that's all wonderful and great, you know, and I love that. But you're absolutely right. You know, I think some of the things that, you know, the barriers are often that it's just one new thing, or, you know, I just don't feel comfortable with that, or what if this and what if that and so on. And I get it, because there's so much on their plates that they, that educators have to do day in and day out. So they definitely get inundated with a lot of those things. But it's important also, like you mentioned, you know, doing your professional developments, your Technology Tuesdays, maybe some lunch and learns, little videos here and there, and newsletters, you know, so many little innovative ways just to get some little bite-sized bits of PD to the teachers that they can kind of try on their own whenever they, you know, they have a little bit of downtime, which is very rare. But when they do, you know, they get to use that up and, you know, just, you know, add something a little extra to their teacher tool belt. So that's always great.
Yeah. I love micro learning for that. Like a little video that's less than 2 minutes. Cause like face it, we're in the TikTok generation now. Mm-hmm. All the kids want to consume stuff that's 2 minutes or less. So the teachers are also following that trend because they're seeing the students kind of lose interest after 2 minutes or so. So if I send my teachers a 1 to 2 minute video of something techie and then have a little activity they can do afterwards, then they are way more likely to do this than if I send them like a 10 minute tutorial and try to walk them through it. Like if I just give them that little itty bitty piece, it might even just like pique their curiosity enough to have them request for me to come in and model it or co-teach with them or plan it with us. So as long as I'm getting my foot in the door, you know, getting their curiosity piques, that's all that matters to me, is that I can get in and get them using the tech and get the students exposed to it. And I'm also trying to show the tech that makes their life easier, that they can use to work smarter, not harder. And that's, luckily this year's like the boom of AI has like really helped with that, because there's so many tools out there that I can just say, use this and then you're done. So it's just been great to like show them different tools and give them those little micro learning tidbits to get to like pique their curiosity, to get them to contact me for more.
Oh, I love
something in their classroom. Because I love like being back in the classroom and teaching to a whole classroom of students. Like that's so much fun. Even my self-contained classes, any of the classes in the building, I'm like, yeah, let me do it. I'm coming in. Yeah. Like, let's do this. So the kids always know too, when Ms. Dawson walks in, it's going to be something cool.
I love that. But that's great. You know, I love, like you mentioned, it's just that little bite size, little hors d'oeuvre that just kind of gets that little appetite there. And then, like you mentioned, I love that, you know, doing that, because then they get engaged and now they want to ask more questions and take it deeper. And then, of course, now you get to come in and you either co-teach and model, and, you know, they know that there's somebody there that is experienced, somebody that's trustworthy, or just somebody there like, just, hey, just kind of watch me do it and so on. You know, and I don't know if it happens to you, but many times when I go to classrooms, I'll get a call and the teacher's like, hey, I need some help with this and so on. And then I show up and then everything's working fine. And they're like, well, I just needed you to be here and all that stuff. And I love it. I was like, hey, that's what we're here for. Like kind of like that little safety net. We're partnering together. We're helping all our educators. And that's the whole point of it. And, you know, like you said, it makes it a lot of fun. So talking a little bit about the boom here, because I know that I do want to leave some time for all the great stuff that you're doing with esports too as well. But you mentioned, obviously, it's been, what, over a year now, the big AI boom. So what are some of the, first of all, what are some of the trends that you're seeing maybe amongst your colleagues, not necessarily within your school district, but outside in your personal learning network? And then what are some of the things that you're looking forward to implementing or have already implemented within your district as far as AI is concerned?
So in my personal learning network, I am a huge ex-Twitter person. I'm always on there. If you don't follow me, please do. I interact with everybody I can. Even if you're not following me, I still look up in and say something. So I'm not shy. But everybody like in my personal learning network has pretty much jumped on board with it. So I feel like AI is something that if you don't jump on it, you're going to get left behind. And it's not going to be pretty. And as much as it's scaring some people, and it's scary, there are some scary features of it, but you have to look at what it's doing for good right now. And I've been working on, I'm presenting at FETSI coming up in January on how to use AI for student accessibility, because I wish I had these tools when I was in the classroom with my babies and it could give them some of this stuff to make life easier for them and for their teachers. I wish I had an IEP goal writer tool like they have in some of the platforms, or like a to-do list maker. So there's some great tools out there even for teachers just to use. So I really try to convince my teachers to let it help them work smarter, not harder, take something off their plate, let it help them write their lesson plans, parent emails, permission slips, things that take time out of your day that you don't want to necessarily do. Give student feedback. It's getting better at giving student feedback on written work. And I'm trying to encourage my students to use it safely and ethically. Right before holiday break, I got a call from a teacher from one of my student tech team members. I run the student tech team at my school. And this particular student is not a strong writer. So he went home and used ChatGPT and told ChatGPT his writing prompts and told it to write it like a third grader with lots of spelling errors. And ChatGPT did just that, and he turned it in. And it took her a little while to realize that he didn't write. But like, I don't know whether to be like, after give him props for like the creativity. Because he like nailed it. He was like, I know I read him at a third grade level and I know I can't spell. So you got to do that for me, AI. And he like nailed it. But it's at the same time, I was like, okay, we can't use AI just to write everything. But maybe let's use it to get us started. So maybe you use it to give you the first couple sentences and then you write from there. So we worked with the teacher to come up with a flexible alternative to what he did. And then we talked about, you know, how to use it for best practices, which I think that's where we're heading. I know definitely in my school district, we're heading towards writing and creating best practices for students and teachers with AI, because it's changing so fast. It's hard to write like a policy. So we're just going to have to keep updating best practices for using it at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And as fast as it's moving, like you said, it's definitely a living document. When you're putting a policy down, I mean, just leave it on a Google Doc or whatever it is that you want to use, OneNote, something that's editable, because from 1 week to the next or one day to the next, that can definitely change. But I love what you're saying. You know, it's really, you know, you really do kind of have to dive in. And believe it or not, I mean, we recently had a summit here in our area at our Region Service Center. And I know I mentioned this in a show, a couple of shows back. You know, it was surprising that maybe about 150 to 170 attendees, there was still maybe about 90% that had not even tried any of the education platforms that are out there, much less ChatGPT. So there's still a lot of people that this is something that is new, because it's either like wait and see, or they're just really scared. Obviously, with any new tech, it's going to change the way that we teach, and maybe even the way that we have to look at our old practice and evolve and grow and kind of get out of our comfort zone. So I agree with you on that aspect, that, you know, as educators, that, you know, we're still lifelong learners. Just dive in, just dip your toes in a little bit. Don't get scared to look at some of the platforms that are already out there in the education space, just to kind of use those. And one of the things with me, like this coming, you know, now that we're coming into the second half of the year, we'll be doing some lunch and learns. And so I'll be hitting the campuses. I'll be doing a lot like PD and your PJs, you know, Saturday mornings, just log on. And, you know, we'll do some things on online. So just to kind of get them a little bit more comfortable. And I'm kind of, believe it or not, I know that maybe this is, I waited a little too long, I think. But I think I waited just the right time, because after Dev Day for OpenAI, we know that there were a lot of apps or platforms that were out there that were doing some of this work that kind of got wiped out because of GPT, some of the updates and so on. So now we're kind of seeing those that are kind of still hanging around and really pushing forward. So I'm kind of glad that I did kind of wait. But man, from January on, it's going to be go, 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 and working with the teachers and hopefully with the students soon as well. I don't know how it may be in your district, but does your district block ChatGPT or AI for your students at all?
No, we are big believers in preparing our students to be global citizens for an ever-changing world. So blocking AI would kind of be the opposite of that. That wouldn't prepare them to be global citizens in an ever-changing world. So they have everything unlocked right now. And I've found that my teachers and my students are responding best to starting with like generative AI text-to-image stuff. Because there's so many cool ways you can integrate that into the curriculum. Like we just did, before break, the eighth graders just finished Frankenstein. So I had them use one of the generative AI tools to type in a prompt. I gave them like a shell prompt to help them. But they had to come up with the adjectives, because that's something we struggle with in eighth grade still, are adjectives. But they had to come up with the adjective to describe Frankenstein's monster and reimagine him with AI. And I had kids actually looking back in the text. Oh my gosh, middle schoolers looking back in the textbook for adjectives. No way, right? But they were so into this, they wanted to get it perfect. And so that gave me the chance to talk to them also about hallucinations and, you know, how many times you can regenerate things before it goes crazy on you. So just, it gave me lots of openings to really help them see some best practices and some safety and ethical uses of it. And now we have all these really cool hipster Frankenstein monsters hanging up in our hallway that just look awesome because they're what the kids imagined as we do the book. Like, it's like growing up, I loved reading. I still love reading. And I always am disappointed when I see the movie because it's not what exactly how I imagined it, you know? But with AI, I feel like I can get closer to that now. Like, I can really take what I'm reading and put it into a generator and have it show me exactly what I want to see. So it's a very cool feeling. And it's definitely useful in so many ways in school for the kids to just really have fun with.
I love that. And that's such a great use case right there, especially, you know, for ELA and especially with novels and things of that sort. Things that, you know, where you're working on theme, you're working on scenes, you're working on scenery and so on. I know when I first introduced a little bit of it at the beginning of the year to some of the fine arts people, it was wonderful, you know, except, you know, there was an art teacher that like, well, this is already way too much of a finished product and so on. I was like, well, the thing is like sometimes, you know, as students ideate, you know, they still need to visualize it. So it's like you're still kind of going from that text to image. But then they're still going to go back to the analog and kind of put it down on canvas and whatever, you know, medium that you want them to turn it into. And then, you know, the teacher for a bit was like, well, yeah, I guess I can see where you're going. But immediately the response was like, nope, that's too much of a finished product. They're not going to learn anything. But when we kind of just talked about it and had a discussion, they're like, yeah, you're right. You know, visualizing this and then kind of putting it back on the canvas. It's perfect. You know, the student gets to know and see what it really is that they're trying to convey through their painting, you know, even a color palette, the scene, whatever it is, you really get to see it firsthand, plan it out, and then you can finalize that product. So I love it. That's wonderful. I love that.
Yeah, about like taking some of the famous artists that, you know, from hundreds of years ago and reimagining some of their works in modern terms and a generator and seeing what those would look like. Like, that would be so cool to say, like, oh, I want it to look like Monet painted it, but I want it to be this scene instead. Or I want Scream, but I want it with the Atlanta skyline mind. Like, just things like that where they can really personalize art and make it mean something to them. Because a lot of times, I know my art teachers that I've worked with in the past have struggled with really getting that connection right now with kids. Like, I taught a couple years ago when NFTs were big, I taught them how to make NFTs and I was the coolest person in the world. So like, you have to get something to hook them into the art right now. And that would be something I would think would hook them really into the curriculum.
Yes, I love it. Absolutely. Well, now that we talked a little bit about AI, but I know that the next thing that we're talking about and that we mentioned, we're like, hey man, we need to talk a little bit more about this. I want to talk about the work that you're doing with esports. So tell me a little bit about that. And number one, I again, going back, I know you have such a huge tech background and you love all things tech, but now how did you either dive in into the world of esports? And how did you start? And tell me a little bit about how the students are doing within the program as well.
So I haven't gamed since like Super Nintendo. So let's start with that. Like, I'm not a gamer. You will not find me on an Xbox. I get nauseous trying to play Call of Duty. So that's it. But when I first started at the middle school I'm at right now, we are a Minecraft district. So Minecraft is open for students. Minecraft for Education is open for students to use. And the teachers were complaining. They're just always on Minecraft. I can't get them off Minecraft. Well, you know what? If you can't beat them, join them, right? Minecraft for Education has some great lessons. So I, over the break, that first year of Thanksgiving break, I taught myself how to play Minecraft and got my certification in it through Microsoft. And then went back to school and taught all the teachers how to do it and started leading lessons in their classrooms. Then we started a Minecraft student ambassador group. And I had students to go into classrooms and duplicate what I was doing, which was leading the lessons and helping the teacher with Minecraft. So the teacher didn't have to be an expert because the students already were. They had to be the content expert and let the kids be the tech expert, which is a lot easier on them. Then we were offered an opportunity to join a pipeline pilot program in our district for esports with actual gaming systems, like PS5, Nintendo Switch, and Xbox. So we signed up. My administrator was like, yes, I want to do this. So we signed up and last year was our first season and it went fine. I just kind of hang out and make sure they don't hurt each other or damage the equipment or swear or anything like that. They're pretty chill. So But I was like thinking to myself this year, you know, this equipment sits in a cabinet all day long. And like, I feel like somebody could be using it. They could be doing something else with this stuff. Cause this is good stuff, right? Who wouldn't want to play Madden for 20 minutes a day, right? If you're into gaming, or who would want to put up a green screen and make a TikTok video at school? I was like, I wonder if the kids would be into this. So I have a very large tech lab, which I'm very thankful for. And I started setting up, well, I didn't even set it up. I don't know how to set any of it up. The kids do. Started letting the kids come in and set up the equipment at lunch. By the time they get down there and set everything up, they have about 20 minutes to play. I run a bracket so that there's no fighting over I got next, because I can't stand that. So I run a bracket. They play through the bracket. Winner gets pride, not prizes. And we start over with another game. And I had about 4 or 5 kids start. Now I have to rotate groups of like 10 to 15 kids every other week because it's spread through the school as something that's so positive for them to do. And then I started thinking, like, I wonder if this is really changing anything else, because I feel like I'm seeing these kids a lot more than I was seeing them before gaming, just in the hallways in general. So I started looking through some data, and in the month and a half that I've been doing this, I started at the beginning of November, and right before we got out for break, our suspension rate had dropped 27%, and our state attendance rate had risen 21% in a month and a half.
That is wonderful.
So, and again, 20 minutes for 20 minutes is all it takes.
It's that engagement, Renee. Oh my gosh, you know, this is amazing. And everything that you get to do. And again, the way they get to come in and participate. I mean, and there's a lot of skills. I mean, a lot of people might not see that. Maybe people from outside of education may not see that, but you'd be surprised that maybe even people within education still may not find that added value. But I mean, you're talking about the collaboration skills. You're talking about the communication. You're talking about, you know, the tech that they get to use. Like you mentioned, you know, the students being able to set this up, the students advocating for themselves, the students just having a great time. But more than anything, that, you know, keeping that high attendance rate is something that is wonderful, because when the kids enjoy coming to class and or coming to school, I mean, then it's great. And more than anything, I'm sure that it has a positive effect too as well on any of their activities that they're doing within their classes, you know, as far as, you know, building into those communication, collaboration, creativity skills that they get to build with each other, you know, even 15, 20 minutes a day when they run in through your lab. So that's something that is amazing.
It's really cool. One of the students that games pretty regularly, I was in one of his classes to do a generative AI activity, and he did it really fast. The teacher was like, he never really does any work. So I'm kind of surprised that he did this. And then he got up and started helping the other kid. And he was like, I just want, you know, Ms. Dawson knows me. So I was like, okay, so this is really impacting them. Like, this is really giving them a reason to be here and a reason to step up and do good in the building. So I was like, this is like really just cool at making a difference. So I've expanded it now where the girls could come in, because they don't want a game, but they don't like that the boys aren't at lunch. So the girls come in and make TikTok videos. I set up the green screen and my selfie ring. They can make TikTok videos. I have a group that just works on coding, kind of on their own. I make them escape rooms for them to work on coding. I have some kids that do some robotics. So we have all sorts of stuff going on there. And it's just this like happy little tech land for 20 minutes a day where they get to just decompress and be themselves and have some fun. Because in middle school, we just keep them going. And they come straight out of elementary where they have that recess. They have that flexibility. So just getting that back to them has just been huge.
Oh yeah, that is huge for sure. Now, let me ask you something. As far as what you're doing, as far as the gaming aspect, is it an actual esports team also that is competitive? Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that's going this year?
Yeah, so we do have an esports team that is competitive and within the district. We play 5 inter-squad matches a season, and we work with a company called Elite Gaming Live, and they provide us with an actual live commentator on YouTube so that I feed the commentator like the stats going into the games, like, you know, like Jaquez is up by 3 points in Madden, and he hypes it up real loud and plays sound effects and like gets them all really going and excited. So it's really cool to have that like live commentator feeling like it's an actual esports event. And then in the spring, our district hosts a district tournament with the top 5 players at each school. And they get to go compete in a single elimination bracket for the top kids in the district. And the cool thing about the program that we have with Elite Gaming Live, if you don't mind me saying, is that they also offer STEM lessons on gaming careers. that the kids can take on their own time to gain more points towards getting to the championship. So you get points whether you win or lose when you play at an event in your inter-squad match, but you get more points if you do these little lessons. So I have kids that go home and log like 20, 30 minutes on this site, and they get like 20 points for doing a lesson about how to be an art director for a gaming career. And then they're like, oh, maybe I want to do this like when I grow up. Like, I didn't know that you could just like to paint and work at a gaming company. So they're seeing all the different, career options they have if they want to pursue gaming as a career other than just streaming or being a tester, because that's all they thought going into this that you could do was either stream on Twitch or, be a tester for video games. They're seeing now that they need lawyers, they need nutritionists, they need psychologists, they need all sorts of things in the gaming industry to run smoothly for these gamers who, we're seeing now, like, colleges, Georgia State has one of the top gaming programs. Like, I think I read an article that said there's 50 HBCUs that have esports programs now. So kids are learning that they can actually go to college if they're playing video games and are good at it. So, I mean, like, I never thought when I was in high school that you could go to college because you're good at Fortnite. Like, that never would have, like, crossed my mind. So I'm also Fortnite certified. So we do play Fortnite creative at school as well, which makes me just the coolest person in the world, because any middle schooler that gets to come to school and play Fortnite, that's like a dream come true. Even if it's creative mode, they don't care. They're just happy to be on Fortnite. So it's just, just being able to give them what they want to have fun at school, it's just so cool to me. It makes me happy. It makes me want to come to work every day. And one of the kids asked me, they said, why do you do this? I didn't really know what to say. I just said, because I thought it might be cool and y'all would like it. And he was like, so nobody made you do this? No. And he wrote me for Christmas and said, thanks for doing everything you don't have to do for us.
Wow. That is amazing.
So much, because I don't have to do it. They know that. So they respect that time. They respect me. They never, it's always yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Time to do, like, the timer goes off, they put everything up and they go. Like, they know it's a privilege. They're smart enough to know that if they mess up the privilege, it's gone. So it's a very smooth functioning program that takes very little effort on my part. I just get my paperwork done while they're playing, make sure nobody's cussing each other out, and we're all good.
I love it.
Very little effort on my part. They set up, they break down, they clean up their lunch, they sweep the floor. Like, I'm just there as the adult.
That is wonderful, Renee. That sounds amazing. And again, just the skills that they're gaining. And more importantly, I really love, can you again repeat for me the program that you work with as far as esports? What was the name again?
Elite Gaming Live.
Elite Gaming Live. And I think that is so cool that they offer those lessons that really opens up, like you mentioned, very important, opens up the eyes to the students of saying, like, wow, there is a career in gaming, not necessarily even just me being a gamer, but like you mentioned, the support staff, the behind the scenes, you've got the marketers, the accountants, you've got, like you mentioned, nutritionists, psychologists, you've got all sorts of people that are in that industry. And again, just to be able to know that and build those skills and still be part of this gaming community and them seeing these opportunities is something that is great. So thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
I think the most important thing I can say to anybody interested in esports, I know nothing about the games they play. I don't know how to turn it on. I don't know anything. And I run a very successful esports program with no knowledge about it. And I don't want to learn it. Let the kids do it. They are more than capable of running them themselves with your supervision. So do not let your hesitation of gaming stop you from starting something that's amazing.
Oh, I love that, Renee. That is well said. I absolutely love what you mentioned. And just that can be very encouraging for a lot of people. Again, that it feels very overwhelming or feel like, oh, I don't have this background. But again, like you mentioned, it's like, it's okay to not know it. You're just there providing a space for students to be able to come and do what they do best. And you're just really kind of letting the students, lead with the tack, in that sense. So that's wonderful. I love it. Well, Renee, this has been an amazing conversation. Thank you so much. But before we wrap up, I know you mentioned you're going to be at FETC later on in January. I believe that's on the 24th or so of January, towards the end of the month.
26th.
All right. So tell us a little bit about some of the sessions that you'll be holding, because I know this episode will be coming out either tonight or tomorrow morning. But that way, anybody that's listening that is going to be there at FETC, they can go ahead and catch your sessions too as well. So what are you going to be presenting on?
So I'm presenting on the 25th on leveraging AI for student accessibility in the classroom. So we're going to talk about how to use all sorts of really fun AI tools that are available just on your iPhone or Android device that you don't have to pay anything extra for, that the kids have in their pockets already. I'm going to show you some cool videos of some things. We're going to talk about some really cool sites. My favorite site right now is Goblin Tools. It's actually an AI site created for neurodivergent people, which we all are a little neurodivergent, I believe. So check out Goblin Tools if you need a recipe for tonight. I have a chef section where you can tell them what you have in your refrigerator, your comfort level with cooking, your dietary restrictions, and how long you want it to take. It will give you a recipe. So you can go try it right now. I use it every morning because I have a brain dump section where you can talk in the microphone and it'll type what you say. So I just brain dump what I need to do that day and it'll turn it into a to-do list for me. So that's just like the coolest thing, because I'm setting up everything and I'm just talking away. And then I just hit enter and it makes it a to-do list and I'm ready to go for the day. So it's just a really cool tool. You're going to learn about lots of really cool tools like that. Everything I'm sharing is free, or freemium at least. So you have, I'm not sharing anything that's paid, and you're going to leave with a bunch of really great resources to take back and use right away. And some that are more advanced than others, but I'm going to that kind of guide you in where to start if you're not familiar with how to get started with stuff.
Love it. That is wonderful. Well, you heard it here, guys. Those of you that are going to be catching the show, you're going to make sure you stop by Renee Sessions at Fetsy. So make sure you check that out. And you said that was going to be what, on the 25th that you'll be presenting?
Uh-huh.
Perfect. Excellent. Well, Renee, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here again, you know, and really just diving in a little bit deeper in our first conversation was great. This was just an additional bonus, but thank you so much for coming back on the show. And again, pardon the technical difficulties. As like I always said, tech happens, but it was meant to happen because you came back and we had just as an amazing conversation like we did the first time. But Renee, before we finish up, I always love to end the show with the last three questions. So here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. As we know, every superhero has a weakness, all right? So we know that Superman's greatest weakness or pain point was kryptonite. So I want to ask you, Renee, in the current state of education, what would you say is your current edu kryptonite?
Printers. I just wasn't made to help my parents with them and help the kids with them. Like, I gotta help one or the other. I can't help both. Printers are definitely my kryptonite. I can barely change the ink in mine. They just unplugged it to wax my floors over the break. I had to put in a ticket to get the tech to come down and rewire it for me. I don't know what to do. So printers are definitely my kryptonite. I can fix a copier with my eyes closed. Printer, no way.
I love it. All right. Question number two. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
It would say EdTech Erudite. That's my YouTube channel name. That's what I consider myself, because I am just constantly on the go for new tech and new ideas and looking for the next new trend to jump on, to be one of the first ones to adopt it. And that's just who I am. I love tech badges, tech certification, micro-credentials, any of that stuff. You'll find me doing it on the weekend because that's just what I love to do.
Love it. Love it. Knowledge is power. You're a lifelong learner, right, Fred? All right, here we go. And the last question is, I don't know what I asked the first time around, if it was the book or the hobby. So I'm going to go ahead and just ask the hobby one more time. So is there an activity or a hobby that you wish you could turn into a full-time profession?
Actually, I do digital art and have started kind of like freelancing in that. My boyfriend went to art school. He went to Savannah College of Art and Design. And I'll make stuff. He'll be like, you don't think you actually know what you're doing. This is good. Like, I'm really good at logos and any kind of like flyer design type of stuff. I recently made an adaptive menu for a special needs coffee shop, like a coffee shop that's staffed by special needs people. And I had to like break down the drinks into like what percentage was everything, like the milk and the coffee and the ice. So all of that had to be hand drawn or at least digitally done and put together. And then they have like pieces they can put together to practice making the drinks, kind of like, you know, practice on the paper making the drinks. So that was really awesome to like get paid for something that I love to do. That's just kind of fun art stuff. So that's definitely where I'm headed right now. Content creation, I do a lot on Teachers Pay Teachers. Anything I did during the pandemic is still making money on there. I love that. Just creating stuff for others to get joy from is what I like to do as a hobby.
Love it. That is amazing. Well, Renee, thank you. I mean, you wear so many hats. You do so many great things. I don't know where you find the time, but I'm glad that you do. And more than anything, I'm glad that you still have that shine and you still have that presence of just being an advocate for your students and for your teachers and just helping them continue to grow, not only professionally, but also personally. Because, I mean, you just have just a contagious just attitude and just charisma and everything. So thank you for what you do.
It's Riz now. That's the word of the year. That's
the Riz.
The word of the year is Riz.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you for everything that you do. Thank you again for being a guest. And for all our audience members, all of you that joined us on Instagram, we see Miss Tanya, we see Renee, we see Brock, Josh, the High Tech Podcast guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Diem, my boy, appreciate you. Thank you for everything. Thank you all for all of your support. And for all our audience members that are going to be checking this out on the replay, make sure you visit our website at myedtech.life, myedtech.life, where you can check out this amazing episode and the other 261 amazing episodes with wonderful educators, creators, founders, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, practitioners. I promise you that you will find something specific for you that you can take some knowledge nuggets from and sprinkle them onto what you are already doing great. So please make sure you visit our website. And also please make sure that you're following us on all socials, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all those places. Make sure you follow us at MyEdTechLife. And also, if you haven't done so yet, jump over to our YouTube, give us a thumbs up, subscribe. We definitely appreciate that. As you know, our goal is to get to 1,000 subscribers. So thank you to all our new supporters as well. And my friends, don't forget, until next time, stay techie.